Coming up, Michael McKean joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ileana Douglas. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Tamara Bird.
Hi, everybody.
Digging that theme music. Today is just, I'm so excited to have Michael McKean here.
I know.
He once sat in the audience listening to his wife, Annette O'Toole, the lovely, who we've had on the show.
Yes, who was amazing.
Read from my book, and that alone was exciting. But it's just so, you know, he's just part of the fabric of the movies and of show business. And I can't wait to ask him the questions, of course, about Spinal Tap, aside from just being a fan of it and it being like the definition of when you're on a movie and you're backstage. I mean, there's no one, you know, that hasn't referenced.
Of course.
Spinal Tap, you know, every time a bellboy is leading you down a hall and you make a turn, you're like, I'm in Spinal Tap, or, you know, you get something tiny and it's Stonehenge, you know. But I want to talk about the origins of that comedy.
Yes.
And his comedy roots and musical roots and all of that. And I thought it'd be interesting to open the show with talking about improv, which I love comedy, but I find improv to be very hard. I did a movie called Pittsburgh.
Right.
That was all improv. And again, in the mockumentary style, but based on a real incident in that Jeff Goldblum had to go.
Oh, yes.
He wanted to do the Music Man. He is a very unlikely choice to play Professor Harold Hill. And he got his friends, Ed Begley Jr. and myself, to go do this show in Pittsburgh at the Civic Light Opera in the summer. And then we filmed it and we all made up our own storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like 18 hours long because you're just shooting all the time. But
was there like a rough outline or
no.
Not at all. It was all just find out where this goes.
Yeah, it started with me and Jeff doing a 10-minute sitting on the street, you know, and trying to get some money and sort of explaining the premise and him literally auditioning. And that was all the true part, him auditioning to get into the show. And then as I came on board, you know, I just tried to make it as truthful as possible. So I was friends with Moby, so I got Moby to be in it, and we staged this fake breakup. But what we did is we didn't tell anybody. We were wearing hidden mics, and so he is mic'd and being filmed, and he's in this parade, and he's saying to this girl like, yeah, I got to break up with my girlfriend. And afterwards, he said he was shaking. It was like so hard for him.
Because he felt like he was a secret spy.
And he thought he was like this horrible person. And then that was because that was the only thing we knew was that I was going to bust in to this parade and be like, are you breaking up with me? And then we were going to do it in this huge crowd. And we did. And people were like, hey, man, that's really uncool.
Not cool.
It's really uncool, Moby. But this was somehow putting something over on people was incredibly the adrenaline of this. And we did it. And then another time when we were in Pittsburgh, the chorus, again, this is all the true part. The people that were in the show thought like, which was be so funny, like these big Hollywood types and they're making fun of us because we were filming everything. We couldn't tell them it was a documentary.
Right.
And they thought we were making fun of them. It was like, no, we're so excited to be here and be in the Music Man. And this is amazing. So we were filming and we were out at this bar. And one of the people in the chorus line, like threw a drink, like got really bad and got in my face. And I just egged him on because I knew I was being filmed and secretly mic'd.
Right.
But he ended up like throwing a drink at me and It was, but afterwards I was like, oh my God, we have that on film. And then a lot of the stuff didn't even make it into the film.
Sure. But I would imagine if it's 18 hours.
Yeah. But so I'd be curious to talk to Michael about that. And
yeah.
then versus the comedy of when we did Easy to Assemble.
Right. So that you've said before that that wasn't improv.
No, that is completely scripted because, as I've said again and again, one of my heroes is Albert Brooks and the movie Real Life, and where it appears almost as if it's unscripted. Like that's the mm-hmm. kind of the idea, but it was 100% scripted and shot list, and we had everything planned, but I wanted to make it seem as if it could be believable that I was working at this
IKEA.
And in fact, what would happen was that people, like, there was a very famous casting director, and I was like, hey, and he was sort of shunning me, like, I guess things aren't going so well for her. She's at an IKEA. And I was like, no, I'm working, but I don't think he really believed me. But we used to stage. That's what was so surreal, is they gave us full access to the store. And so we were shooting dance numbers, and
yeah.
we notoriously did this is all made up, this is comedy, but we shot a sex video with me and Tom Arnold. And again, it was supposed to jumpstart my career, but it backfired. that was the premise. But
right.
we shot it in a working store.
During the store hours.
At IKEA. And people got to watch. Like, they put up, little barriers.
Tape.
And again, IKEA's only note was that we not block the aisles. That was, was all they cared. Nothing about that I
have
was...
Have sex if you want.
Shooting a sex video.
Because it really showcases the furniture. And, we want to make sure people buy furniture. Ileana Douglas had sex on this sofa.
Well... And that's what was amazing about that shot, is that we staged it so that it was like a Robert Altman movie, in that you think we're doing the sex video, and then the camera pans out,
right?
And you see me walk out of the fake the IKEA bedroom into the working store, and you see all these people, and you really see that. Like, that's, the license that they gave us. So, and that's why I'm so excited to talk to somebody like Michael that has really blended a love of show business, but with putting something over on people, but doing it artistically.
Right.
I mean, all the way back to, as we were saying before on air, Lenny and the Squig Tones, and having a real record, and it just seems like the greatest.
So when you were doing Pittsburgh, did you enjoy that process? Did you not enjoy that process? Was it easy?
I loved it, but as I said, the issue is that you end, which is one of the questions I want to ask Michael, is that, you end up with 20 hours of footage.
Right.
And I did, and again, you feel a little bad. And we had this other experience, and it didn't even make it in the movie.
Right.
Where, again, this is true. If you want to Google, I think, Ileana Douglas, Jeff Goldblum, Sri Chamoy cult. This was yet another thing that we really did. Now, Jeff didn't tell me. We went to this cult run by Sri Chamoy. Run to your computers right now. You'll find it. And I'm like, I'm game. And so we filmed it. But in fact, we got there and it was a real cult. And the storyline was supposed to be that Moby had broken up with me publicly and humiliated me. And he was going to take me to this, meet this guru and make me feel better. That's the storyline.
Ah.
But in real life, we got into this van and went to Queens, and it was a cult. And they quickly separated me from everybody, and was asking me what my relationship was like with my family. Did I want to have children? They were like grooming me to be in the cult. And the cameraman at the time, they were listening, because they, once again, these people didn't know I was mic'd. So
right.
they were listening. They were like, what's happened? We've lost Ileana. They're bringing her out to the woods. They're going to indoctrinate her in the cult.
Start feeding her only carbs.
Anyway, just to finish this off, in the audience that day, believe it or not, unbeknownst to me, there was a reporter and a photographer from the New York Times. who shot my photograph, and it appeared in the New York Times. And we were so into the movie, we did not reveal. Like, people were calling me, like, this guy's a fool. Are you, you're not in a cult, are you? And I didn't. I was so into the
process.
Now, of course, it'd be on Twitter. Ileana Douglas, cult.
Yeah.
You know. But we totally, you know, lived this thing. And then the guys cut the scene from the film.
Ah.
So if you look, so every once in a while, people will go, weren't you in this cult? Like with Jeff Goldblum.
You have to spell Shri Chmoy because
Shri Chmoy. And he used to do this thing where he'd lift people. It was fake. You'd get on a hydraulic lift and he'd
lift you with his mind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And of course the thing would go, you know, gung, gung, gung. And you know, and you can see my face, how thrilled I am in the photographs.
Amazing.
Anyway, Pittsburgh. Yeah. That's a good
Let's
movie
bring
to check
in Michael.
Out. Well, Michael McKean, sorry, as I sip my afternoon tea, Michael McKean has had a career that spans four decades. Of course, originated the role of Lenny on Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley. Of course, you can come. Do you like hearing about yourself?
I'm pretending you're talking about someone else.
This is Spinal Tap. I mean, how do you go on after This Is Spinal Tap? Moment of silence.
You don't. I passed away sometime after that. I've just been dragging my ass through the rest of my life.
On and on. I mean, The Simpsons, Clue, of course, which is great. Curb Your Enthusiasm. All the, you know, Better Call Saul, which you're doing now. And your Broadway work, which we're going to get to. The Best Man, which my grandfather was in.
Of course he was.
He originated.
Yes, he was.
Gore Vidal. It's a wonderful... wonderful play. Mm. You are a Grammy winner, and you've been nominated for an Oscar. Please welcome Michael McKean. Thank you.
Thank you
so much for being here. I was saying before, because I did a mockumentary movie with Ed Begley called Pittsburgh.
Yes, I saw it.
And saw it?
With Jeff Goldblum's movie.
Yes.
Oh, my God, it was insane. So the New York Soho Film Festival.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what the only difference with that was that we were mixing, we were lying to people and telling him it was a documentary about Jeff so that people would act themselves. But in actuality, it was horrifying. We were leading people down a rabbit hole.
Oh, my God.
Kind of making fun of them.
It's a wonderful movie.
Thank you.
And Jeff's moments before he goes on opening night, his moments alone.
Yeah.
And that was as genuine as I've ever seen an actor portrayed on the screen.
Yes.
It really is. It's that level of nausea.
Yes.
And suicidal thoughts. It's kind of a wonderful scene.
Yes. It was that, it's to me, that was I don't know if it quite got accomplished, but what was to me the most funny thing about it, and it seems like you're a student of show business too. I love, you know, the pathos that he's this big movie star in Jurassic Park and he wants to do The Music Man, and they actually didn't want him. They said, well, maybe you could audition. And then he gets in, and the guy who, you know, was
the director was appalled.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
And the director whose whole life had been doing this musical, just he broke Jeff to the point where Jeff thought he was a horrible actor and was asking everyone for advice.
Movie.
So that's why it was a lot of fun. Okay. I have to ask my favorite question because I'm so curious.
Okay.
And I know you grew up in the North Shore of New York.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what movie theater you saw, but do you remember the first movie you saw and who took you to see it?
I believe the first movie I ever saw was called Lily. 1953. I was 5 years old. And my mom took me and my sister, who was 3 years older than me, still is 3 years older than me. And do you know this movie? Leslie Caron.
Oh, okay. Leslie Caron. Is it about the puppets?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of it was kind of scary to me just because it was so big.
Yeah.
No, I mean, really, that's why I tend to believe it was the first movie I saw in a theater.
Yes.
I watched a lot of TV, you know, but in those days there were three channels and, you know, thank God there were Westerns on a couple of them, you know, or I wouldn't watch it at all. But I do remember that. I do remember that vividly. Around that same time, I also saw a lot of the Disney releases mm-hmm. and re-releases, Dumbo and Peter Pan, which I think was new in 53 or 54. Mm-hmm. Don't know. But anyway, yeah, I went to the movies whenever I could.
And you're also a big Laurel and Hardy fan.
I am.
Yeah, I mean, they're the best.
They are. They are.
Now, that is something where I grew up in the 70s. They're not on TV anymore. Abbott and Costello, Hope and Crosby, you know, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, and Laurel and Hardy, and the Little Rascals, were all on television.
I think it may have had something to do with the ownership of the property or something.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen a lot of the silent Laurel and Hardys? Because they're amazing.
I've seen some of them.
They're really remarkable. I mean, Big Business, of course, and Two Tars.
Yeah.
And they're really, they're kind of spectacular. And the notion that they passed seamlessly into sound because their voices matched what they looked like.
Exactly.
You would imagine they would sound something like that if you didn't know.
Yes.
Others didn't make that transition, you know.
I also like the idea that they didn't ever, if there was a catastrophe, they kind of caused it. It was their own.
Yeah.
It was their own stupidity.
Yeah. And it was, and it didn't make you not root for them.
Right.
But you were okay with things falling apart because that was the funny part.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love them. Now, and then you later became part of a team. Did that ever occur to you?
Credibility gap you're talking about?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about later?
And then Lenny and Squiggy. Laurel
and
Hardy. Lenny and Squiggy.
Yeah.
Partnership.
Yeah. Well, listen, when a pair of guys or three guys or a squad mm-hmm. work beautifully together, it's kind of greater than... It's less a given than one funny guy standing there.
Right.
He's going to fail or succeed on his own merits. But to have the machinations going between two or more people,
yes,
that's kind of the fun part.
Yeah, that's something that is... We don't have really any partnerships anymore, do we?
It's kind of floating. I mean, there are... The outgrowths of Whose Line Is It, you know, like kind of their road company. But they change, you know, sometimes Joel Murray's there, sometimes he's not, you know.
Right.
And so there's this kind of fluctuating thing. But no, that hard and fast, it's these three guys or it's these two guys.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. Occasionally.
That was always my you know, because growing up, you'd always hear the, you know, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner would, you know, they'd entertain at parties, Nichols and May.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing with you, like that you would, does a party stop? Like when you hear a story like that, I'm always curious. Like, and I was watching a Rob Reiner, and he was like, they used to do this routine at parties. Like, what does that mean? Does it mean?
Well, David Lander and I.
Yes.
We went to college together. We met at Carnegie. Then Tech, now Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and you know, we were both kind of show busy guys, you know, and we had our idols and we had the people that we loved, and we loved funny people. And David was one of the most inventive and just kind of free comedy mm-hmm. spirits. You know what an Ignu is? An Ignu is an angel in comic form. David Lander is one. You could think of a lot of others.
Yeah,
Buster Keaton, Robin Williams. I mean, there's just something about them that is a little bit off
and
in a lovely way. But he was kind of one of those. Mm-hmm. And the two of us knew these idiots when we were growing up.
Right.
Separately. And we kind of brought them together. And yeah, I don't know about things stopping, but everyone loved them. I mean, because they were the dumbest guys in the room, no matter where you were. It was kind of fun. And we did them at a party that Penny Marshall and her then husband Rob, celebrating Penny's selling the show, this Laverne and Charlie spinoff show that her brother had co-created, mm-hmm. and so we, you know, actually Rob kind of, we just gotta do those guys, and so
that's why it's so interesting because his dad did the same kind of thing. It was in the DNA. Now I've got to cross this over. Did you ever see your show of shows, The Haircuts?
Oh, of course.
I mean, wasn't that the greatest?
Oh, my God. Do you remember that great, they did this great introductory line one time. He says, this I would like to do for you now, I would like to do the song that made us famous, and we hope that when you hear it, it will make you famous too.
That is one of the most insane.
Yeah.
Whenever I need, like, a laugh, you are so rare for me to me.
Oh, my God. These guys are great.
And so does, I, you know, it's sort of, so when I saw you guys like on the American Bandstand, and also Peter Sellers did also a little bit of. He did a rock guy.
Yeah.
That
what was
had
his name.
I don't remember, but I remember.
We're just good friends. That guy. Yeah. I can't remember. Guy.
Yeah.
Can't remember the guy's name.
He gets in trouble. He goes, "You've spoiled your blue jeans. My jeans are too tight."
I ripped your blue jeans. Yeah, take my fountain pen. Take my fountain pen and ink in where the flesh shows.
We are just good friends. For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, that is
that's
like
awesome.
That whole I when CDs kind of just came in, and I had just come to LA, and you had a CD player in your car.
Yeah,
I religiously listened to that.
You knew who produced those.
The Beatles,
George Martin. Yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah.
So did those shape at all what you did, or you were doing something different?
You know, I think once you're kind of performing, you think you got it all. You think it's all coming from you.
Yeah.
But of course, everything you ever seen that worked for you is on some subliminal level still with you.
Yes.
So I'm sure that's what was up too. I didn't say, hey, you know what was funny? When those guys made fun of that band, we should make fun of a band too. It's not like we went, boy, the Ruddles are really on to something. Let's do Spinal Tap.
Right.
It just happened. It kind of grew out of this sketch that was on this show that Rob Reiner did. So it just seems, let's make it real. Let's be a lousy band and make it fun.
But with, again, it sounds like, you know, it's always so funny just to even say it out loud. But, like, you were on American Bandstand.
Lenny and the Squig Tones.
Yes. Yeah. So it's surreal. Like, because Dick Clark is really interviewing you, seriously asking you,
he played it really well.
You kind of sound like Jan and Dean and the Beach Boys. And was he on?
Oh, yeah.
He's in on it.
No, he knew. I had met him before because I had done the old Pyramid show.
Oh.
When I was first on Laverne and Shirley, Penny and I did the show.
Wow.
And I went on to do a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And so, no, he knew what was what. You know, he knew that this was a gag. But, hey, you know, we wanted to move some units, but we didn't manage to. But we did get to be on American Bandstand.
Well, you didn't grow up in Connecticut. There was a store called Bradley's. I don't know if you're an East Coast person.
Yeah.
Bradley's was always where, you know, you'd get these albums.
It was like, a chain?
Yeah, it was a chain.
Yeah.
So I'd get, you know, 99 cents. They had a comedy section, you know, so you'd go. Yeah. When I was a kid, I didn't even know what I was getting, but it was a dollar. So
I was talking to Carol Kane about that, about how you used to get, you'd buy a new comedy album and you'd have your friends over and you'd sit and you'd listen to it.
Totally.
So 45 minutes of your party is right there and everybody digging it. So whatever was new
art
or Don Rickles, when he finally first came, his first comedy album, which was so screamingly funny. I don't think you'd find it anymore. But, you know, the people, Bill Cosby, the people who made you laugh, you know, it's like, hey, you sit and nobody's looking at their phone and nobody's running out.
Those were the fun days.
Yeah.
And the, I have to ask, because it was so funny, talking about when you had the credibility gap, there's a very funny story about you playing downtown at the Bottom Line and they wouldn't move their drum kit.
Oh, yeah. Billy Cobham. Great drummer.
Yes.
Intractable.
Yes.
I mean, literally. Yeah, he set up his drum kit, which contained, you know, estimate 1,000 pieces, all of them nailed to the floor, and left us with a space to perform in about the size of the, there was four of us at the time, about the size of this table.
Yeah.
And the group almost broke up over that, because Harry, bless his heart, wanted to go out and open the show by telling people what he thought of Billy Cobham.
Love it.
We all thought of Billy Cobham. Like I say, a great drummer. Everyone said, no, you can't do that. You're going to alienate. Most of those people are there to see Billy Cobham. We were opening for him. Da, 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 da. So anyway, it became this kind of almost a meltdown. Yeah, the Bottom Line.
When you're performing, does that then later come into play when you're doing The Mighty Wind? Because it's like, are people still doing folk then or...
Yeah.
The tail end of folk.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, my friend Loudon Wainwright, he's still a guy with a guitar for the most part. I mean, it's just, you can't really make a living if you have a whole band to go and you don't sell, you know, enormous amounts of product. You know,
right.
You're, so a guy with a guitar You know, a lot of I know a lot of people who do that, and so they're essentially folk singers. There are people who are just actual folk singers. And,
But I always there was a rite of passage. I always thought, being a teenager and into my 20s, where you'd go to a thrift store and just like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, and buy
it. I still do this.
Yeah.
And, I still do this.
And put it on. And then when you saw Mighty Wind, it was like, oh, it's kind of like that movie.
Yeah.
It's like all those people that had one, made one album and got a poncho. And
some of them went on to do other things.
Yeah.
You know, Alan Arkin was in a folk band.
He was?
Oh, yeah.
He was I didn't know that.
I don't want to say the Tarriers.
I think you're right.
And they did one of the they did a cover of the Banana Boat Song.
Oh,
you know,
right,
Day-O, right. Day-O. Yeah, and they had actually the a big hit with it. He went on to do other things.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, and so were there other because when you were on American Bandstand,
right.
Christopher Guest is
He's Nigel,
which is surreal. Again, it's like Zelig when you watch it. You're like, wait a minute. That's not right. Yeah. God, I love YouTube. But was that your go-to, like, 2,000-year-old man that you would go to? Or did you have a variety of...
No.
With the British rocker?
No, it was just with the Squig Tones, we had a shot to do something. And we tried it. Chris was my friend who was a guitar player, a great guitar player. And also, you know, he said, well, let me be an English guy. And he's this character. And that was the name he came up with. Shortly after that, we did a little piece, a little video piece that never saw the light of day, where he started calling me David. And I didn't have a last name. He came up with my last name later on. But, it felt right. And it was fun to improvise with those guys. So.
Yeah.
You know, then it's Spinal Tap, kind of. Chris and Harry were both writers on Rob's, on this special that included the Spinal Tap gag. And so we just kind of, it kind of fell together.
Where's the title come from?
Spinal Tap?
Yeah. Is that there?
I have, Chris gave me this, my opening night on in Hairspray in New York. He sent me the paper, the sketch pad paper.
Wow.
Where all the notes, all the maybes, all the names go on there. You know, Jumbo Prawns was one of them. Brain Hammer. I mean, all these other names. And Spinal Tap spelled two different ways. SPI and SPY were also included on this page. And I have it framed in my house
now. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I remember being on the phone with those guys. And I remember not being the one who came up with it, but no one can remember who did.
Who did, yeah.
So it was either Rob or Chris or Harry, is my guess.
Because when you're very old, you can fight. You could be like the Three Stooges and fight about it.
No, that wasn't me. No, that was my cousin.
Will there be... I mean, I guess there has to keep being like as you get older. I mean, you went on tour and you do you imagine Spinal Tap is like Rolling? Look at the Rolling Stones.
No, it's a little different.
It is.
Yeah. First of all, the Rolling Stones have never put on a pound. You know, they still look like hungry English rockers, and we don't anymore. You know?
Yes.
And you know, there was a little groundswell about 3 years ago, and it just. It didn't appeal to me, you know, and or Chris, and we had just done the Unwigged tour, you know, where which enabled us to do songs from Mighty Wind, from Tap, from other sources, mysterious stuff, Guffman, you know, it was really fun, and to do Tap again is just to really mount it like you know a big overblown event is very expensive, and it just didn't work out. So I think our last show will have been at Wembley Arena in London. And, of course, the Folksmen opened for us, which was very kind of them.
Yeah.
They didn't get a penny. just did it for the love. And
you didn't negotiate?
No. Those guys, they don't know what they're talking about. So I think that was a good swan song. I think we still love each other very much.
Yeah.
You know? And eventually we'll get together.
You'll
we'll
see. Never
around,
say never.
Nah.
No. When you were shooting the movie, it's sort of, as you watch it now, it's like the cream of the crop of every, you know, Paul Schaefer, Fred Willard, Fran Drescher.
Dana.
I mean,
Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
Howard Hessman. Howard Hessman, whose part didn't even exist 24 hours before.
Uh-huh.
We had a guy in, the guy who plays Duke Fanno, remember the scene, Howard is this, the manager of this rock and roller.
Yeah.
And they have a little interaction with him, but then how we have this big scene with Howard and Tony Hendra. And, you know, it's pretty funny stuff. So we had the guy playing the rock and roller come in for a costume fitting and realized the guy just couldn't talk. The guy just not only couldn't improvise, it was like he couldn't really focus, you know. So, oh, Christ. And Rob did that thing with his bald head where he just tries to smooth the brains back down from their getting fluffed out. And so some genius, not me, had the idea, let's call Howard Hessman. He'll be a manager. I think it was probably Rob.
Uh-huh.
Call Howard, because Howard, you could wake him up at 3 o'clock in the morning and he'll improvise, you know, 2 hours for you. You know, he's one of those guys. When Howard was with the committee, he had a scene that opened, guy in his living room who is dropped acid about a half an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then his most annoying friend comes over. That's the scene. So you don't know that going in. Lights come up. Within a half a second, you know that he's the guy who took acid a half an hour ago.
Wow.
He's just like, just generating this energy, you know? He's an amazing guy. Anyway. Yeah, we were lucky. We got a lot of people we didn't know. We didn't know Fran Drescher
right.
from before, but she came in. She literally had us at hello. And we had her, you know, she's amazing in the film. And, you know, others who kind of came in.
And did they know what you were onto yeah. or was it so new that?
They pretty much knew.
Had there been a mockumentary before?
Well, not really.
Did you even know the word?
One? No.
It's like my grandfather used to, he bristled at the term screwball comedy because he said we never called them screwball comedies.
Well, you can't.
He said they were
because
just
if you
comedies.
Say, here we are acting like screwballs, it ain't going to be funny.
I know. It's the same thing with a mockumentary. When did that...
We're
making a mockumentary.
Somebody in the reviews of the film. We never used it.
Right.
And Chris really hates it.
I hate it.
Yeah. It doesn't...
I hate it.
It seems to this air of superiority, which is...
Exactly.
And then it would work. It wouldn't work at all.
Exactly.
If you really... If you're talking down to the people you're making fun of... It's not going to be interesting for more than a couple of, you know,
right.
a couple of minutes.
You know what
John Cleese says about farce? He says, farce is what happens on the worst day of your life. It has to be, you have to take it very seriously or else it's not going to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with screwball comedy, I think. You can't be, here's this bunch of screwballs.
Right.
Here's these people who are in terrible, terrible marital problems, whatever, you know,
right.
and that's what makes a farce work.
Mm-hmm. It's also that idea of like jazz. Sometimes with today's movies, I find there's a lack of clarity where everybody's trying to be funny at the same time.
Yeah.
I really don't know where the focus is.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the older comedies, like one person's funny, one person's watching.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it funnier.
Yeah.
You let it sort of ride a bit, you know.
I also think a lot of times, I think comedies are written for people who aren't very, who don't have a long attention span,
mm-hmm.
who aren't sharp, who really want the next pop. They want the, you know, and sometimes that can be great. Airplane is a brilliant, hilarious movie,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't wait for anybody. It just keeps, you didn't like that one? Oh, here's another. Nothing wrong with that kind of thing. But they're all pretty good gags.
Yes.
Just Another Gag is like, it's like you're just getting zest with a cattle prod, you know? It's not great.
Did you choosing your look, tell me about that. Like everything about it is perfect. Mm.
I played a guy who really wanted to look like Peter Frampton.
Okay. You know? Okay. I mean,
we didn't cross over into the real world at all in the film.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's what if there was a Peter Frampton in David St. Hubbin's universe, that's what he wanted to look like. And he let his girlfriend dress him. So, you know.
That's funny. Well, you know, I was one of those people, my brother saw the movie first. So there was that kind of odd, is this real? Like I had that half and half, is this a real move? Is this a real band?
Yeah.
Which must have been really hysterical thinking people thought it was real.
Well, when we sneaked the film in, I want to say Houston, somewhere in Texas, and in San Francisco. San Francisco is slightly better. But the one in Texas was a disaster. And they just, people thought, what's going on here? Right. I've never heard of these people. Why is the meathead in the movie? You know, I mean, it's like, that was literally what it said on the cards. There was one woman, I'm only saying she's a woman because I happen to remember. She wrote, you know, the little blanket says, what did you like about this film? She wrote, DNA. What would make you, what about this film would make you recommend it to other people? DNA. Does not apply.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was like, no, people just didn't get it and didn't like it and thought it was a real band that they'd never heard of. And someone made a, you know, jittery looking movie out of it.
Was it Hollywood? Because then the second round of when I heard about it was through, I'm totally name dropping here, but it does refer to the movie.
Yes.
Martin Scorsese, who bragged. He kept saying, you know, it's me. It's me. It's supposed to be me. And last, so he takes total credit for whether it's true or not. He says Marty DeBurgi is him from The Last Waltz.
Yeah, but see, DeBurgi DeBurgi is a Jewish name. It's not an Italian name, so you got to.
Sorry, Marty.
And he, Rob did have a beard, and he did wear. I don't think Marty wore a baseball cap.
He didn't. Ball. That's the sort of the Spielberg-esque West Coast part of it.
Yeah,
but the the Last Waltz. So you must have people who are some of your favorite people that have come up and said it's me, isn't it? Or have they not?
Nobody's come up to me specifically.
Yeah.
I have gotten a lot of things from people, from rockers who just said, you know, you must have been a fly on the wall. How did you know this? Or how dare you, you know, take my nightmares and put them on the screen. Steven Tyler always turned a little white when he saw us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He just said, too close, guys, too close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, every trope about show business.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
every time you're referring on a movie and a prop is too small or
you're
leading, I'm saying you're going backstage. Like I've never been backstage where you don't think of.
Hello, Cleveland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, according to Jeff Beck, he and Eric Clapton, who's going to pick up all these names? the two of them, they were playing at B.B. King's 75th birthday in the Apollo. And they did get lost under the stage.
I love it.
And they looked at each other at the same moment and went, we're in that movie.
Did you have a favorite day of filming?
We shot the concert stuff in a kind of a clump. I think 4 days. And that was all really fun.
Yeah.
Because you could get away with anything, you know. Right. And, you know, one bunch of people were taking care of the crowds, you know, just getting us a bunch of people in. Mm-hmm. Getting the crowds to react appropriately. And then the rest of us just had to pretend that we were playing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we recorded all the tracks, so it's really us playing. But, you know, for a film, you had to do it that way. And all that stuff was really fun.
Yeah, you know? I can imagine. So then it definitely leads to a partnership with you continuing to work with Harry Shearer and Chris Guest. Oh, I'm going to segue. Did you ever see, because I'm thinking of Harry Shearer, did you ever see The Day the Clown Cried?
I didn't.
Okay.
Harry has. Have you had Harry on the show?
No, I haven't, but it's
no,
always,
he'll tell you all
it's
about
a showbiz rumor. You could, you know.
No, he has seen it, he's remarkably tight-lipped about it.
Okay. All right.
Well, or else the experience was indescribable. Because he's never really gone on at length.
We're going to be able to see it, you know, in 10 years on Jerry Lewis's 100th birthday.
That's not even 10 years, is it?
It's going to be 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, 9 years.
Wow.
But because he put it in the Library of Congress. So it's there. So we will be able to see it.
All right.
So I'm pitching a Christopher Guest film
about going
the making, making of The Day the Clown Cried. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Wow.
Yes.
Well, see, Eddie Deason could play Jerry Lewis. Remember Eddie Deason?
Yes.
No? I haven't seen him in a while, but he that was a thing.
You could play. You could.
Oh, no. Like maybe as a corpse. Sorry.
All right, I got off topic. So your working relationship with Chris Guest is he a good laugher? He seems like, I once had to audition for him, and it was one of the most terrifying experiences.
He can look a little stoic.
And Eugene Levy. Neither one of them laughed. And
but Eugene gave you this smile. He kind of grinned at you rather than laugh.
He grins like, but you go like, what does that mean? Like, God, I feel sorry for you. I thought it meant like, God, you would know nothing about comedy. Please leave the room.
No, Chris is great. I messed him up. We were doing For Your Consideration, mm-hmm. and I just had a line that I just threw in, and it made him laugh, and it blew the scene out. And we tried to do it again. And with the same joke, and he broke up again. So it's like, okay, maybe I can, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty funny joke, but it was just sort of like, yeah, he laughs.
Well, do you think the secret to a partnership I'm stating the obvious, but like that you genuinely like the person and you have a rhythm and you have the same references.
Right.
So that you just know where they're going.
Well, I've known Chris for 50 years. Mm-hmm. So she says, shit, you're old.
That is.
It's true. We were teens and we met.
I know you're on American Bandstand. It's so cute.
And we do have a lot of the same references. We don't like all of the same stuff. I mean,
really, like, what do you disagree on?
Well, it's funny because like, Chris has a very kind of a soft. Do you know this movie called American Movie? It's about this guy who's trying to get this movie made, this horror movie called Coven.
Oh, the Coven. Yes. Okay. Yeah, Coven. Yes, I do know it. Of course.
I think it's a
well.
Hilarious movie.
Yeah.
And Chris, it infuriated Chris because he just felt like these people, I don't want to see these people. They make me really sad.
Yeah.
So it's like there's just different things, you know, different strokes. You know, he's got a very fine seam of stuff that he likes.
Yes.
And I think I do too. But I'll watch, as my father used to say, I'll watch anything that moves.
Yes.
That's me.
And do you have, like, what were some of the, any rejected spoofs? Like you mentioned Westerns before. I mean, you guys would sit around and just be like, oh, we should do this or the.
No, because usually those things come from Chris. Mm-hmm. You know, the dog movie came from him walking his dog, you know. With his dog in the dog park, just right. Noticing owners and their relationships and everything. Mighty Wind was essentially an idea that we had come up with years before,
right?
When we had done the Folksman on TV. But this was, you know, again, you know, he and Eugene crafted this thing together to get it made and all that. So it usually comes from Chris's angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always, people are always suggesting, hey, you know, Chris, you do a movie about this and do a movie about this.
Like, what? What are some of the bad, ridiculous ones?
The Catholic Church, yeah. That's, that's pretty funny. Probably not for us. Probably.
I love it.
Yeah. Excuse me.
What about, now I'm going to be one of those people. What about, like, you know, a pie?
Spit take coming
a
up.
A pie. I always thought, like, people who bake, you know, but like pie contests.
Yeah.
Country.
Well, here's the thing. There already exists essentially that. The Great British Baking Show.
Oh,
it's a fabulous
show. It's the best.
Yep. And you don't need anyone to do a parody version of that.
Yeah, you're right.
Because those people are hilarious already.
I thought your crust is. I'm
soggy
sorry.
Bottoms.
Soggy bottoms. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's
have you seen the new ones with Noel Fielding?
I'm not sure.
Not yet.
I don't think they're on here yet.
No. They're not.
He's this really funny guy. There's this thing called The Mighty Boosh. Do you know this thing?
No.
It's a really funny series. It's these two guys, and they're zookeepers. And everyone in it is insane. And it's got this guy. Yeah, look it up.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Zookeepers.
Yeah.
I'm in.
It's hilarious. But Noel is one of those guys, and he's the new kid on the baking show.
Yeah, you mentioned zookeepers, and on the show when we had both Ed Begley and Annette and John Hurd, and talking about cat people, and again it was insane and really really dangerous, like it was, and they you would never get away with, but they were working. There was this real zoo in New Orleans, do you have any cult movies that you like crazy cult movies, like So Bad It's Good? Are you into those?
Yeah, I got tons of those. You know, we play Mystery Science at our house. You know, if
so
the movie
good.
Is terrible enough,
Yeah. You have
that's
to.
That's all you need. It just gets funnier and funnier. There is a movie that not a lot of people know about, and it was a big studio release, and I think it made money and everything, called The Last of Sheila.
Oh.
Now, people don't know about this movie.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing film written by Stephen Sondheim and Anthony Perkins.
Yes.
It's like that pedigree alone. And the cast is James Mason and Richard Benjamin, Raquel Welch, Ian McShane, Diane Cannon, one of the funniest performances I've ever seen, as Sue Mengers, essentially. Joan Hackett, brilliant Joan Hackett, who died in her 30s. It was just a disaster. Wonderful actress. A funny script, insane script. James Coburn as... I hope this son of a bitch gets killed in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's one of those movies. It's fabulous.
I love, when you did a movie like Clue, would you hope that it had that same quality, that large cast, everybody being funny?
Yeah. It was
very, you had different endings.
We did. And I think that sunk us at the box office.
Really?
Well, people said, they just want me to see this movie 3 times. And how will I know if I'm getting the same ending or not?
Yeah.
I really think there was a resistance there. And when they finally released it on video, they did the right thing. They had 3 different endings, and they just stuck them on. Or it could have ended this way.
Yeah.
You know, and they were all fine. Mm-hmm. It was a really fun shoot.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. We had people on. We've had, what's her name? I'm now blanking on her name.
Leslie
Warren, who I adore.
Great. Yeah.
So I want to talk about some of your other movies. First of all, you work with Dennis Hopper. I've never even heard of this film.
What the hell was it called?
It's
called Flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Flashback. Okay, this is how things happen sometimes in show business. Flashback was originally a project for Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Robin was going to play Dennis's part. He got signed onto the project a guy named Franco Amori, an Italian director.
Uh-huh.
From Italy, not from the Lower East Side. So he was going to be the director. Mm-hmm. Robin dropped out for some reason. They recast it. They kept the guy, and he really wasn't the right director for it.
Right.
So it was a fun thing to shoot. I saw it. There's some good people in it.
Did you ever talk to Dennis about, acting or... What phase was he in?
A little bit.
He was a big James Dean fan.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Well, they were friends.
I guess. But I always thought he was interesting because he did studio films and then, indie films and then ended up by doing studio films.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. I talked to him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that everybody wanted to talk to him about, I wasn't particularly interested in, which was... How are you still alive?
Yes.
Is it true you took all that, you ingested all that stuff over the years?
Yeah.
But occasionally someone would mention something that would make him, I remember those days or something. And he'd go on a little bit, I thought he was really fun, really friendly, really nice guy.
When you're on set, are you like, do you have camaraderie? Are you into that? The city? Yeah. That's my favorite. That's the only reason I got into show business.
I know. And free soda.
Yeah.
You get a free soda anytime you want. The best.
I'm at craft service packing those up at the end of the day. Sharing stories. Who are some of the, I would live for, I did a sitcom and I didn't care that I was on the sitcom. All I wanted to do was talk to Ernest Borgnine. That's all I did.
Those guys.
Yeah.
The people who've been around the block.
Yeah. Did you ever have people like that come across?
I did a movie, a very obscure movie called Man Trouble with Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
And Ellen Barkin and Harry Dean. And it was a really good cast. And it's not a good movie. Because it kept devolving. It was Bob Rafelson and Carol Eastman, who had made 5 Easy Pieces, the two of them, and Jack. But they weren't at the top of their game, And Jack was getting very frustrated because it was like, who's in charge here?
Right.
So he kind of took over some of the direction a little bit. But we shot for a week nights in Griffith Park. So it was just the movie company and the coyotes. And it was really kind of fun. So me and Jack are having this fight, and we roll down this dirt hill, And they get one pass at it because we're going to be, you know, a disaster. So we get to the bottom of the hill. We're filthy. There's broken glass in our hair and everything. And we're both really laughing. And he goes, this is why we got into this, so we could play in the dirt.
Aww.
You know, and I just thought that was kind of like, yeah, that is kind of a kid thing. You know,
yeah.
It's, you know, when you first see people doing that, you first realize that that's a job. It looks like an amazing job.
Yeah.
You know? And it is.
Well, that's what I think is so amazing about your career, is that you managed to do both, you know, to be in films, but then also, you know, there's this kitschy, I don't even want to use the word kitschy.
That's okay.
Because I feel like that's wrong. But that love of the tradition of the grease paint, you know.
Yeah, and
those old variety shows, the comedians, you know.
Yeah, that's why I love the theater, too, is... you know, you join a theatrical company to do a play.
Mm-hmm.
It's like moving to a small town, and you get to know everybody.
Right.
And you get to have feelings about some people. Yeah, very different feelings about other people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a community, and because you're all, you know, you're not trying to save the orphanage in this case. You're trying to get this play on every night.
Right.
I just had a wonderful experience doing Little Foxes with Laura Linney and Cynthia Nixon.
Great
and Richard
play.
Thomas. It's a fabulous play.
And who did you play in The Little Foxes?
I was one of the brothers.
Yeah, one of the mean brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was Ben. I was Uncle Ben, yeah. It's a wonderful play.
Oh, my God. And the movie
is such a good time.
Do you like the movie with Herbert Marshall and Betty Davis?
I don't like
the
movie now that I've done the play, because I see some idiotic things that they did.
Uh-huh.
One of which was adding the boy next door. You know, it was like, really? You need a love story for the daughter here? That's like the least interesting thing you could possibly do.
Maybe they wanted it
do.
To be hopeful.
They just, yeah, exactly. They just wanted something, you know, for this. The squares
horrible.
Will dig it.
As this horrible
The squares
family.
Will dig it is what they say when they're mixing records. Keep the finger pops in there. The squares will dig it. The play is kind of an amazing play. And the fact that it was written, you know, in 1939. And could be about certain rich families of our acquaintance.
Yes, absolutely. Did you ever have, I would be so nervous to be in the theater and have you come on stage and have the audience laugh or hoot or expect you to do something funny. Does that ever happen? I don't want to put that in your head.
I don't think so.
Sometimes I have seen that happen where someone known for comedy, suddenly it's like, ow! Oh, thanks. That just ruined.
Well, no, I don't think I've ever had that problem. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's usually because the play is happening around me.
Yes.
It's not like I'm going, ladies and gentlemen, funny thing happened to me on my way to the stage door.
Well,
I don't do that.
You didn't see Jerry Lewis and Damn Yankees, where he would stop the show. Okay. Two Jerry Lewis references in one show.
You know George Abbott? You know George Abbott was?
Yes.
Lived to 106. He was a guy who produced, wrote everything. I mean, he did the original production of Damn Yankees. He has a writing credit on, I think, you know, it's like he's one of those guys. So he was about 102 or so. My friend John Corcus, who's a wonderful actor and teacher, he says, I got a little one act play. Want to hear it? Sure. It's called the Death of George Abbott. Okay. Here's it goes. Mr. Abbott.
Yes.
Are you ready to hear the news of the Rialto?
Yes.
Well, we've got Jerry Lewis going into Damn Yankees. Mr. Abbott? Mr. Abbott? That's the play. John Cork. Copyright John Cork.
You were also... So let's talk about your musicals.
Okay.
Hairspray.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been a blast. With Annette?
It was great. No. Well, in the audience.
Oh.
10 or 12 times.
Oh.
But no.
Just a really fun play to do.
It was fabulous. Yeah.
Good morning, Baltimore.
I followed Harvey in, you know, and it was like some big cups to fill, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And he was awesome. And, I, you know, when I went to watch him do the show, I'd already been, you know, they'd already okayed me to take over. And,
yeah.
So I was rehearsing and everything, and I went to see Harvey do it a couple of times. And at one point I asked him, do you have any idea whose idea it was to call me? He says, Bernie Telsey, I guess. Mm-hmm. Bernie Telsey's big casting guy in New York. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't really know Bernie. I mean, I'm not really sure. And he said, well, I don't know. And then I heard a rumor that it was offered to Kelsey Grammer and that Kelsey suggested me.
Oh.
But now I don't believe that. And I haven't seen Kelsey since then, so I have to ask him. So anyway, I'm curious about it. But it was really fun. I did it for 6 months, and I made friends that will be my friends forever. Mm-hmm. And I got that thing, that stepping into an existing unit.
Yeah.
You know, you're now a piece of machinery.
Right.
You know, this is not, you're not going to ideate about how everything should be done. You're stepping in there.
Right.
And Harvey was amazing at that, just mm-hmm. guiding me through it, you know, just very actively.
Yeah.
You know, I was trailing him, but he was very actively keeping me in on absolutely everything he did,
mm-hmm.
including the guy whose ass I had to grab as I go by backstage. I said, no, he's always standing here. You got to grab his ass. And so,
I love it.
Yes, sir.
I love it. And you also did now the pajama game.
Yeah.
Oh, another great.
Fabulous.
Frank Lesser, right?
Nope.
No.
Adler and Ross. Richard Adler and Jerry Ross.
So funny. I think I always make that mistake. Why would I think that
they wrote Damn Yankees.
Okay.
And those are the only two mm-hmm. shows that they did, because Jerry Ross died in his mid-30s, I think, or late 30s, after having written these two amazing shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard went on, you know, and did some stuff, wrote some hit records and everything, mm-hmm. and... You know, but he was always there for a revival. And,
yeah.
So he was always around. It was Kelly O'Hara and Harry Connick Jr.
Mm-hmm.
and me and a lot of amazing, cool people. Roz Ryan and, Peter Benson and my pal, Megan Lawrence, who, I don't know whether you saw the recent, 10 years ago, revival of Hair.
I did not.
Oh.
I did not.
Well, and Megan's just this remarkable. Yeah.
Well, I love me. I mean, I'm a sucker for. Did you ever do Spamalot?
No, I. You know what?
You would be perfect.
They wanted me to do it on the road, and it just didn't fit in. I had to be in town,
right,
for that chunk of time, and it just wasn't going to work. But it would have been working with Mike Nichols. Would have been following my friend Tim Curry. You know.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah,
that was a fun experience.
Tough one. That was I'm sure it was.
Well, maybe it'll be a, you know, because sometimes like even at the Hollywood Bowl or they do these one night things.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to cast you in that. All right.
Okay.
Before we get to Better Call Saul, I have to ask you about used cars. We were talking about cult movies. Oh my God, I love this movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
Did you have, aside from, you know, Robert Zemeckis as the director, what is your experience of working on that film?
Well, it was my first location.
Canada, right?
No, it was it was Arizona.
Oh, I'm right on them. I'm it's Frank Lesser, no?
No, it was Phoenix, Arizona and Tempe.
That's
yeah. So my first day I was under a bus in Tempe, Arizona. Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun.
It's a crazy cast.
Yeah, and it's a lunatic story. And there's a kind of a weird thing about there is a whole thing about having boobies on TV.
Yeah.
That at the time was like, well, that never ever happens.
Right.
And that's why this is like such an enormous gag. You know, see boobies on TV now. You know, it's not such a huge thing. You know, but the rest of it pretty much works. And you know, there's some people in it, Debbie Harmon, who's a really lovely actress, very funny, and Garrett Graham, who's a good friend of mine.
He's fantastic. Where is he? He's so good in this movie. What's he doing?
I saw him last at a screening two or three years ago, 4 years ago, because I think back to my broken leg. You know how you kind of judge things by, I was doing this gig or this was after my broken leg, things like that. So I remember all of us were on, you know, a lot of us were kind of the walking wounded, you know. But anyway, but Garrett, he's really funny in that. I saw him, that was the first time I'd seen him in years and years. He's kind of doesn't do too much, kind of semi-retired, I think.
Uh-huh.
He moved back east, I remember at one point, and, you know, it was just kind of like screw Hollywood kind of moment. You know?
Yeah.
But funny man.
It's a sort of, and any recollections of, I love Kurt, I'm a big Kurt Russell fan. I love him when he does comedy.
He's amazing. He's a really, really good actor. And he ain't never going to get any older. He's never going to lose a single hair, this guy. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah, Kevin Bacon's never going to lose any hair either. I mean, no. It's an outrage.
He doesn't eat. I've done two movies with him. He makes me sick. He never eats.
No.
He does. He had a bike in his, like one of those spinning bikes in his room. Like the rest of us are eating cake from craft service. He's spinning and playing the guitar. Yeah. And
Kurt's great. At the time, it was during the hostage crisis, the Iran hostage crisis. So, you know, guys who were, had a little kind of a military bent were kind of really gung-ho at that time. And so there was a lot of that going on. I didn't really
It may have hurt. Did that hurt the movie?
No.
It didn't affect.
No, I'll tell you.
Because it's a cult movie. Oh, no.
Spielberg's theory.
Ooh, okay.
Was that his own movie that came out at the same time, which I think was, what was 82? Wasn't E.T. E.T. was.
Jeez, I don't even know.
83.
I mean,
But one of his movies was all of a sudden doing better than they thought.
Right.
And it was hanging around in the theaters where he was going to try and put used cars.
Oh, I see.
So he always, he felt that it got kicked down the road, you know, by you know, the distributors and by Commerce and everything.
Yeah.
Because he loved the movie. I mean, it was a real.
Oh, it's great.
You know, one of his guys. And he, you know, of course, believed in Zemeckis and Bob Gale, the writer, you know.
Yeah. I like it. It has those qualities of Spielberg, like sort of Sugar Land Express or crazy car stuff.
Yeah.
It's really out of control. So I highly recommend it. Okay, we have to get to Better Call Saul. How did that even come about of you being asked to be on the show?
I had done some episodes of X-Files as a character that was Vince Gilligan and Frank Spotnitz created. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of a recurring guy on that show. And every time Vince or Frank, for a while, had anything in the hopper, they would give me a shout. And it was usually like, oh, I'd love to do that, but I can't do it. I'm going to be in New York for the next 6 months, or I've got something else. So, and when he was doing, when Vince started doing Breaking Bad, there was a character he wanted me to do. And so, you know, it was the same thing. I was on my way to Broadway. I was on my way to do something that I thought would take a long time. So it was a pass. And so he just kind of stayed in touch, you know. And then when the notion of a spinoff of Better Call Saul came, and there was a character created as Bob's brother, they had the notion to, you know, to tell me about, to offer it to me, or to at least, you know, put me in the mix. And they told Bryan Cranston before they told me. So we're doing All the Way together on Broadway. And he turns to me and he goes, yeah, you know, they're going to give you a shout about that, playing Odenkirk's brother. You should really do it. And then we went on. And it was just like,
oh my
I
got to
do a scene now? I got to think about that? So it was like, yeah, it was planted that way.
Wow.
So within 24 hours, they gave me a call and we discussed things. And,
yeah.
You know, it sounded like a good idea to me.
So. It's such an amazing show, and all the acting on it is.
Yeah, it's good.
It's so incredible. And you also have a cooking show.
I do.
Well, I love
Isn't
to cook.
Weird?
I know. How did you do it? Do you like to cook?
No, I don't cook at all.
No.
I make a really good marinara sauce.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, how do you make,
ends there.
How do you make your marinara sauce?
Okay. You just take a little olive oil,
yeah,
and you roast up your garlic, you know.
Is it like Goodfellas, or you raise
it? No. You just crush it up, throw it in.
Okay.
No, it's so sloppy. You know, I just know generally how much oregano to put in, you know, and all that. I made a really good sauce last week. It was excellent.
Okay.
But, no, I don't know. They just said, look, they want you to present this show. It's six shows.
Yeah.
It's just six shows. So we did six the first time, and I got the scripts, and they were like, you know, the language is a little clunky, you know.
Yeah.
So they said, no, you do whatever you want with it. So I got my daughter, Nell Geislinger, to would you help me with this? So I'm in Albuquerque shooting the show, and I'm on the phone with her at night talking about these scripts. So we did the rewrite, got picked up for another 13. We did the same thing. And Nell was always with me on the set because she's just really smart, and she's an actress and a writer. And so then for the third season, they said, you know what, we're hiring Nell. So I said, good deal. You pay her. And so now she's a writer, producer, and it's really kind of cool.
Oh, fantastic.
So anyway, it's all family. And my other daughter is one of the art directors on the show. And we really had, it's really, really fun. It's really fun.
Well, anything with eating and food. Yeah. I have been on the, as everybody on this show knows, I've been concentrating on making the perfect matzo ball.
Ooh.
This for the I know it's good.
It's been going on for a couple of weeks now, too.
And it's
your peanut butter is excellent.
Thank you. That's almond butter.
Even better.
Okay, I experimented with it, but I'm my quest is to make a matzo ball soup for Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. Wouldn't that be fun?
If you pass with them, you've passed.
Then yeah. You're a real Jew.
A genuine Jew.
I don't know if that's true or not. Anyway, Michael, thank you so much. And
my pleasure.
We adore your lovely wife. Of course,
me
she was
too.
Here.
Yeah, she's pretty
she's
cool.
She's so in love with you.
I know. I'm in love with her, too.
I know. It's so amazing.
Don't tell her. She'll get the big
you
head.
Guys
you
guys are amazing. What? I mean, what's the secret? What's the, what's
I don't
the
know,
secret?
We're coming up on 19 years.
Oh, my God.
We've been together.
It's incredible.
As of around the middle of April, it'll be 20 years we've been in a relationship, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just hit it off right off the bat.
Well, we had
talked
known each other,
or something.
We had known each other for years.
Oh, yes. Now I remember. Yeah. Tell your version. She told it on the show.
Yeah.
She was going with Bruno Kirby for years. Mm-hmm. And I knew Bruno. And Bruno later, of course, was in Spinal Tap.
Yes.
But before that, I just knew Bruno a little bit. And whenever I would run into him, I would run into her. And I saw her. This is really gorgeous girlfriend he's got here. And, you know, things, and you know, we had a lot of mutual friends, Begley and Goldblum and those people.
Yeah.
And then she moved off to Oregon mm-hmm. and had her kids with Bill Geislinger. And so then we worked together in 1997 on this movie and this TV movie. And it's the reason the TV movie existed was to bring us together because it served no other purpose. It wasn't very good. we were both free at this point and
yes.
we both started talking seriously and so yeah, okay. Life without you is not as going to be as good as life with you. So
oh God, I'm going to cry.
No, that's
amazing.
That's how what it all boils down to.
Yes, yeah. That is beautiful. All righty. Well, thank you so much, Michael.
You,
please
Liliana.
Come back anytime.
Okay.
We adore you.
Thank you so
we
much.
We do.
You were so quiet over there.
I know. But
I know
I
you didn't interrupt
say,
at all.
I have things to say right now.
Oh,
though.
Okay. All right.
You can find Michael at MJMcKean on Twitter. Thank
yes.
you, Michael. Anything else you want to
MichaelMcKean.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You will find written pieces. There's a piece about what I said about doing Little Foxes, like moving to a small town.
Yeah.
There's a piece about that.
Oh, okay.
A small
great.
Town in Manhattan.
Great.
Yeah. So go there too.
MichaelMcKean.com. Yeah. We will do it.
Thank you
also,
so much.
Also, buy Ileana's book, I Blame
yes.
Dennis Hopper,
yeah.
online.
You know that
Amazon.
Annette has read to me from that book?
No, I didn't
yes.
know that.
Yeah.
I love
it's
it.
It's a good book. It is definitely worth
Thank
buying
you.
And
Next
reading.
Next time we do a reading, you'll have to. You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a part two. The next one's going to be all dark stories.
Excellent.
Yeah. I'm your man.
All the dirt.
Also, find us on Facebook. The website is ilianaspodcast.com.
That's right. And as I always say, everyone's life is like a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And this is the end of our show. Thanks so much. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
It's been a joy.
Bye,
Thank
everybody.
You.
See you next
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.